Welcome to the Steel Study Podcast with your host, Jeremy, where Steelers football comes together with history, education, and flat out random weirdness. Let the lesson begin.
What is up, studians? No, it's not a study session. It's the Steel Study Podcast, episode number 13, July 16th, 2021. And I am your host, Jeremy Ritz. I'm so grateful that you're here with me today on this latest edition of the podcast. We've got a very special show for you today as Neil Coulong, senior editor of the Steelers sites for USA Today, is joining us. We'll have him on a little bit later, but very grateful that Neil joined us. And we got a lot of other great things we're going to cover with you. So we're just super excited that you're here. And again, gratitude to you, wishing you a great day and a great weekend. As we've been doing the last couple of weeks, really the last week, we've just started this, but we're giving shout outs to our Twitter followers, those of you that are supporting the Steel Study. And today's shout out goes to Gary Curtis. You can follow Gary at Wine Blogman on Twitter. And Gary, much love to you. Shout out to you. Gratitude to you for following the study on Twitter and for supporting us and supporting our work. So Gary, I hope you have a great day, man, and have a great weekend. Again, Neil's going to be coming on the show a little bit later. What you can expect from the Steel Study in the coming week. When you're listening to this, you'll probably find that on the site I have the biggest questions heading into training camp posted. It's your training camp primer as the Steelers will report to training camp on July 21st, which, hey, that's next week, so it's very close. So make sure you take a look at that. And then part three of the first chapter of the Big Ben Project, which takes a look at quarterbacks post Terry Bradshaw up until Ben Roethlisberger. That will be available either Sunday or Monday, so be sure to check that out. And then we're going to have plenty of new content coming to you, especially as training camp kicks off. I also want to share with you, and I think I mentioned this the other day, that I will be at training camp on July 31st in Heinz Field. We'll have a ton of coverage coming to you of training camp that day, hoping to connect with a lot of other beat writers and bloggers and hopefully players that are there at the time. Our friend Alex Kazora from the Steelers Depot will be there, so we're hoping to connect with him. So again, be on the lookout for a lot of content coming during training camp, but especially July 31st and thereafter. So what's going on in Steelers news? Well, can't say it's much positive. Talked about Ben getting beaten down in the media. Not going to go back there. But Cameron Hayward did call out Devin Bush the other day. Bush put out a tweet that read something along the lines of, "Welcome to the mind of a psycho." Something along those lines. I don't have it verbatim in front of me. And Hayward's response to him via tweet was, "Calm your beep down." You could take that two ways. Proud that a veteran leader is calling out this young man who needs to get his focus on football. Maybe it was done in jest. Or you can also look at it as, does it indicate some internal dissension? Something that should be handled behind closed doors that was handled out in public. Not really sure how to interpret that, but that's the reality. That's what Hayward put out there. And he put Bush on notice. And hopefully, as Zach Banner tweeted 2 weeks ago, whenever he does see Bush, when he reports to camp, he's taking his phone. Take that phone, Zach. Take it. Lock it up. In other news, again, not of the positive variety, Dwayne Haskins was victim of domestic abuse at the hands of his wife. According to a police report, Haskins was struck in the face. There were reports that he had lost a tooth, that there was a laceration to his lip, that his lip was split. Haskins came out after that and said, "Don't believe everything that you hear." I believe his wife also chimed in on that report. Again, Haskins did nothing wrong here. He was not the perpetrator. He was the victim in this instance. But these types of things are not uplifting, positive, encouraging, or supportive of his candidacy to take over as the number three quarterback. Now, again, did he do anything wrong? It does not appear that way, but the drama is something the Steelers could do without. Does it mean that Haskins is going to be cut? No, he's still going to compete, but Haskins has to understand he's got to stay away from these types of situations as a professional with the Pittsburgh Steelers organization. And then finally, in Steelers news, if you haven't had a chance to listen to the Steelers Depot Terrible Podcast episode, I believe it was a week ago now, that Dave Bryan did. He had Joel Corey on, who is a salary cap guru, and was talking about the pending TJ Watt contract and what to expect in terms of that deal. And he says that you can expect TJ to make around $30 million a year. But he also pointed out something that was pretty interesting, and it's all based on the way the Steelers structure their contracts, which is a bit cumbersome, and they're one of only three teams that does it in this unique way. I don't remember the ins and the outs. Again, I would encourage you to check out the podcast from the Depot. I'll post it in the show notes. But because of the unique way that the Steelers structure their contracts, Corey said that he would not be surprised to see TJ Watt get a signing bonus of around $40 million. That's a hefty number, but based on the way TJ Watt has produced over the years, would not be surprised if he got it. And I'm hopeful that this deal gets done sooner rather than later so that it doesn't drag on and TJ can begin his pursuit of winning the Defensive Player of the Year in 2021. So that's what's been going on in Steelers news. Again, we could shift out of these dramatic narratives that really have nothing to do with football, have more to do with social media and really nonsense. So looking forward to next week. I also wanted to touch on an article that I published on Thursday about quarterbacks who have played 18 years in the league. If you haven't checked that out, I'll put that in the show notes for you. But basically, I took a look at those quarterbacks who have played 18 years. There were 10 of them. Of those 10, there were only four that had more than 250 passing attempts. Those players were Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Brett Favre, and Vinny Testaverde. So for comparative purposes, I look specifically at those quarterbacks to try to figure out a projection of what we can expect from Ben Roethlisberger this season. If you go check out that article, you'll see that their statistical output was solid. The average yardage was around 3,800. Average touchdowns was 25 touchdowns, I think, to 15 interceptions, and a completion percentage of 66.6. A little spooky, 666. But anyways, I don't give that stat line average to say this is exactly what Ben is going to do, but it gives you an idea of the range of performance that we could expect. So he'll more than likely he's going to fall somewhere within that range. So make sure you take a look at that. I also thought it was unique that five of the quarterbacks on that list are Hall of Famers or are potential Hall of Famers. Two of those potential Hall of Famers being Tom Brady and Drew Brees. So there's only 10 quarterbacks on that list now, but after the 2021 season, there will be 11. That quarterback will be Ben Roethlisberger. And like those five others I mentioned, he will be a first ballot Hall of Famer. The other quarterbacks on that list only played in spot duty as backups, so you really can't generalize their data to Ben. But again, check out the article. It's an interesting read. It gives you some context of the historical perspective of those quarterbacks who have made it that far. And really, it's an accomplishment in itself to have that type of durability and longevity to play 18 seasons in the NFL. And Big Ben is one of those players. So check it out. And now, it is my great pleasure to introduce another tremendous guest to our show. We've been very lucky these last few weeks. First, we had Alex Kozura on, then Dave Bryan, and the last 2 weeks, it's been Jim Wexel. But today, we welcome Mr. Neil Coulong to the Still Study Podcast. You're going to love this segment. Very insightful guy, very knowledgeable about the Steelers. And you know what? He's passionate and he's a hard worker. And that's going to come through in this interview about how he approaches covering your Pittsburgh Steelers. So without any further ado, please enjoy this interview with Mr. Neil Coulong.
All right. Well, everybody, welcome back to the Still Study Podcast. And we are very grateful and thankful that Neil Coulong, senior editor of NFL sites at USA Today and the Steelers Wire, has joined us. Neil has a long history of covering the Steelers. He does great work. He's been on DK Sports before. I believe he was the originator of Behind the Steel Curtain, and he can share that with us. So he is knowledgeable about the team. And Neil, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Yeah, definitely. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Neil, I see that you're from Minnesota. What are those winters like, and how did you come about covering the Pittsburgh Steelers?
The winters are as advertised. It's pretty bad, even to the point where you get away from it and you don't know how you made it through to begin with. I mean, really, it's kind of like you go dormant for 4 or 5 months out of the year. There's snow on the ground for probably 6.5 to 7 months. It's a really long story. My family is all from Pittsburgh. I was born there. My family moved around a bit when I was really young. So for the most part, I grew up in Minneapolis, right outside Minneapolis. I went to college at North Dakota State University in Fargo, North Dakota, which is even worse than Minneapolis. And from there, I grew up around the upper Midwest. Work more or less brought me out to Pittsburgh, which is where I live now. And I have been thankful during every winter season for the last 7 years that I've lived there. For people in Pittsburgh that complain about the winters, I really enjoy telling them that you have no idea what you're talking about.
So, you know, I believe that your start in writing about the Steelers and covering the team started with Behind the Steel Curtain. Can you walk us through the genesis of you covering the team and writing about the team and how that has brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, I just a point of correction. I actually started with Jim Wexel. I believe you had him on your last show. I was doing kind of a position-to-position analysis of opponents upcoming Steelers games on Steel City Insider way back in the day. It makes me feel really old. This was like 2006, 2007, I want to say. I got hooked on to Behind the Steel Curtain in 2008, and I was working under a guy named Michael Bean. He was the one who started the site. SB Nation, large network of blogs that they were then and still are now, had gone around and bought up a bunch of independent sites. Bean and his brother had built Behind the Steel Curtain. I think they were both in Austin, Texas at that point. they started it. They kind of built the following of it. I got hooked into it when they moved over to SB Nation, and he put out a call for writers. And I was on a work assignment. I was in journalism. I should probably point that out for the sake of the timeline. I have a journalism degree. I worked for daily newspapers for a bit after school. I was the editor of a daily newspaper in northeastern Iowa. That's as bad as it sounds. I hated it. Went and got a real job after that, one that had regular hours and paid me regularly. But I really enjoyed writing. I enjoyed that process. And again, this dates me and shows how old I am. But I was just getting into this whole newfound thing called a blog by that point, probably 2004. And I was writing for a couple different sites. I found a couple different forums and message boards. And I was really enjoying the community part of it. I really enjoyed interacting with readers. That didn't happen in newspapers at that point. You didn't see that. I felt that was something off which you could build a brand. And I had come across Behind the Steel Curtain, and that's really kind of what they did. That was their thing. The way that Bean ran it was really he put out kind of general concept pieces and invited comments. And they'd have these really long, enjoyable back and forth messages, from users in the community. And it went kind of from post to post. I really enjoyed the culture that they had built. And I got involved with it kind of to write the news stuff. I was a journalist. That's kind of how I wrote at that point. So the idea was we could kind of blend the two styles together and focus on community interaction, conversation. We really wanted to push that and make that kind of the forefront of what we did. Around 2011, I think it was, SB Nation was acquired by Vox Media. And with it came a bunch of other stuff. One was a real big push into video content. And that's much more in Michael's line of work. They hired him on full time with Vox to do some really cool wide reaching video stuff for their whole platform. And Vox is really, really big, certainly much bigger than just the SB Nation brand was. Mm-hmm. And they offered me the editor job of Behind the Steel Curtain. It was great. I loved it. We did some great things with the site, kind of building off what Bean had set up. Had a great community. There's still a lot of people I talk to in social media via email, text, and stuff like that I met through doing that. So it really was kind of, the first run millennial getting into really what kind of transcended everything that we know today, the real pure digital communication with people, right. Building relationships up that way. I was doing that. I absolutely loved it. And from there, it just happened to be, I came across a gentleman named Chris Perrone, who's the general manager of USA Today Sports Media Group. We kicked around ideas of what we would want in a network, and he made me an offer, and it was one that I really couldn't turn down. So I moved over there, built Steelers Wire. They really liked what they had, so we built the whole network. And within the Wire network on USA Today SMG, we have, I think, 65 sites, something like that.
Wow.
I had a hand in building all of those. I do the NFL part. We also have a college network now and an NBA network, and we have expansion plans for other things as well. So somehow or other, I got caught into digital media. I was in a financial consultation, real estate type of job before that, and I enjoyed that as well. But the market being what it was, jobs weren't really working out. So somehow or other, I got into this, and I've made a career out of it. And I'm not even exaggerating when I tell you, a day doesn't go by, I don't think of how the hell it even all happened. It's a fluke. It's a luck. It's a bit of luck. It's a lot of hard work that goes into it. But for the most part, right place and right time. I met some great people that helped me out a lot throughout my career. And here I am. And I never really lost the fan hat. I enjoy the hell out of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I've always been a diehard Steelers fan. And I've been able to kind of parlay, something of a living out of it through writing, which I also really enjoy. So I'm very lucky, extremely lucky person.
That's awesome. That's a fascinating story. And you mentioned there that it took a lot of hard work. I read somewhere that
you had a morning routine where you woke up super early and were cranking out articles and pounding coffee. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, man. I'll be honest with you. I missed the hell out of those days. That was I absolutely loved that. It was just that. I had a job. I had your regular 8-to-5 job, probably more demanding than that. It was a probably more 9-to-10-hour day.
Wow.
But I got ready for that every morning, like clockwork. I got up, I made coffee. I had like one of those big 50-ounce coffee mugs you get at like trucker gas station.
Yeah.
And I'd fill that up and I would drink coffee, blast Metallica in my headphones, which were connected to my iPod. That's how long ago this was. heavy metal music and writing on the Steelers. I read everything that the newspapers came up with. I kind of did the aggregation thing. I'd come up with my spin off of something. And I just voraciously wrote what I, kind of came up with on the fly. And I had probably about 2-ish hours to do that before I'd have to get in the shower and go to work. It's not that I hated my job so much. I really enjoyed starting off my day that way. And I still miss that. I think I mentioned it to you when you called me here initially. I love this time of the year because it always reminds me of that, those late July, early August, getting into training camp mornings when you could write on the new team. You know, you went through free agency, you went through the draft. Now all these things are coming together and we're seeing the results on the field. We talked about all these what if scenarios all the time. So our eyes and our fingers were bleeding come mid July, but now it's all there, that the excitement of everything, it's upon you. And right. Again, to name drop Wex, the greatest column I ever read were his morning notes at training camp. And I think a lot of what drew me to it is because I think he kind of did the same thing. He was writing it really early in the morning. It was digital, so it'd go up whenever he was done with it. And you could read it. And it was just it felt like you were there. And I always wanted to write as if the fan was really covering this. Right. my thing was always level-headed analysis. I wanted to be kind of the mantra we have in the NFL Network is super fans who know how to write. We want to be passionate, devoted fans to the team, whether that's, positive or negative. But we wanted to have that sense of this is a big deal to us because it is. I'm not going to explain it to you. If I need to explain it to you, you're not in the right site. There are a lot of quote-unquote objective outlets that you could read. We want to be we want to dive into the undrafted free agent class. We want to go over the practice squad as if these guys are the next James Harrison, because let's be honest, we're Steelers fans. As far as the NFL goes, keep this in mind. I think this is one of my favorite stats. The NFL saw from 2000 to 2008, two undrafted players go on to be named MVP and defensive player of the league. Okay. That did not happen. It didn't even come close to happening at any point in the NFL prior to that. So with that and unlimited space to write outside of a newspaper, you had the ability to kind of say, hey, what about this guy? What about that guy? You could dive into every single player on the roster and really kind of, figure out who they were, how they fit into the team. And it was, there was a clear and obvious level of fan that wanted this in the market. And it just frankly, with all due respect to the great beat journalists that have covered the Steelers in my day and still do, but they didn't cover that the same way. They really kind of cut it off after, one 500-word article a day. I found myself as a fan, I always wanted more. As a journalist and a business person, my thought was people want more, we're going to write more. Let's keep going. We don't need to stop at this. I say that, and yes, I'll be the first person to point out I might have been, maybe a little too excited about, the Lima Swedes of Steelers history. I might have made too big a deal out of certain things sometimes, but by and large, we kept a pretty strong grip on reality. It's just we went deeper than daily paper competitors, if we can call them that, were willing to go. They didn't want to go deeper than that. I feel like, and I'm not the only one, but I feel like my contribution to this culture overhauled the way that we view journalism today. I think it's important because the 24-hour news cycle was always there, but I just remember feeling like I could have read a lot more of this. I wanted to go more in depth. You might remember wasn't that long ago that reporters would write quote unquote notebook pieces, and they would have bullet points of these little tidbits.
Yeah.
I was like, I wanted to write more in each one of those. Like, there's a lot more that we can go into here. What about this? What about that? I just always felt myself feeling like there's more that we could have done here. Yeah. And it was truly, for me, it was a labor of love, because I'd write six pieces without even thinking about it. It's like, this is the kind of content I always wanted to read. And I found that the feedback was overwhelmingly positive. We tripled our traffic yearly. Behind the Steel Curtain got to be big. I mean, it was one of the bigger blogs in all of SB Nation. And it was really just done through the idea that we're writing the kind of content that fans want to read. And at that point, there wasn't an Athletic. There wasn't a real digital leader of anything. We felt we could provide a fan perspective of, you know, the fans' favorite team. You know, there isn't enough content you can write about the Steelers. We had everything. I remember getting an argument with people about was it Alameda Te'amu, I think, was the guy they made walk from Latrobe to the Walmart or whatever to get stuff, and he hurt his foot. We had like 2 days worth of content on that, and it was the most non-issue you've ever heard, you know. And teams don't release information like that. Players are much more buttoned up than they used to be. We made hay out of anything, though. You know, it really told a very deep and very rich story of the team going into that season, and then extending it through to the point where they, you know, back then would invariably lose in the playoffs. We really enjoyed the whole process. We really hung on everything that the team was doing, where we thought everything was going. And it was great because, you know, everything was always kind of a new phase, you know, through the season, the regular season and the playoffs, then it's free agency and the draft, a lot of salary cap, you know, real hardcore dork stuff. We embraced all of that. I feel like we created a brand that we could market to diehard fans. And I think that really is what the NFL is. I think that's why it's still, despite all the problems it's had, by far and away the most popular sport in the country.
Right. And when you talk about the beat writers that used to do the bullet point coverage, I remember Ed Bouchette used to have his slog that was premium content on the Post-Gazette. But I was the same way. I would read those. I think he would post them before the games, but always wanted more elaboration. And I agree with you that the fans do have a desire for that depth. And, you know, talking about July this time of year, you know, a lot of things in the news right now in relation to the Steelers, even though camp doesn't start until the 21st. And really probably what's been talked about the most in the past 24 hours is the domestic incident involving Dwayne Haskins and his wife. What do you see as the impact of this being on his ability to stick with the team, if any? And do you see him making the squad this year?
I'll say this first and foremost, just because it's important. And I think journalists in particular need to remember this when they are giving their opinion on things. I am operating on the information that I know as of July 15th, 2021. Which is to say that there was the one report that came out, which was very detailed. I think it was from a TV station in Las Vegas. It seemed like they took it all from the police report itself. So I'll say this. Everything that I read on it really was that Haskins was not the aggressor in the situation. And it sounded like, you know, to be honest, I'm adding this part, but it sounded to me like two people had a little bit too much to drink and got into a fight. Not a good situation, I don't think, for anybody, but I can't imagine there will be real negative ramifications for either of them there. I think it's certainly a cautionary tale for them, but for anybody to, you know, you got to remember, you need to respect your partner regardless. Right. You know, that's not a good situation for anybody. That said, it doesn't sound to me like Haskins really did anything. If you want to call him the victim in this case, I think that's appropriate. He'll handle that however he's going to handle it. I don't anticipate the Steelers making a statement on it. Per their brand, that's not something they're going to weigh in on, because weighing in on it probably gives it more fuel than it deserves. That said, I can't imagine. I mean, that there was a comment from somebody in the Pittsburgh media saying that he felt melancholy about the entire Dwayne Haskins situation now, because, you know, what if the Steelers gave him a zero tolerance, kind of mandate in his contract? Nothing in this suggests that he did anything. So to even bring that up as if it might be a problem, I think is journalistically, it's irresponsible. You shouldn't be doing that. I don't think it means anything to Dwayne Haskins. I think it's something that we probably wash down the river a lot faster if it wasn't the middle of July, everybody wasn't on vacation, and there was something else news-wise to talk about.
Right.
That said, with Haskins, as far as his ability goes, there's a lot to like about him. He can still sling. That's rule number one. If you want to be an NFL quarterback, you better be able to throw the ball. And conversely, if you can throw the ball, you're going to maintain your job as an NFL quarterback for a while. The question is, what level are you going to be? I mean, right now, I would imagine, just because to me this would be smart business, you've got a quarterback who you can acquire on a rookie level salary, which is not a first round pick anymore. So you're going to pay him absolutely nothing to be your third string quarterback and be maybe physically the most talented guy that you have. Now, that's a nice weapon to have. It doesn't mean anything as far as what he's going to do, but they can control where Haskins goes, and they can hold the threat of releasing him outright. Again, they have him go, work for his third team in 3 years if he doesn't do the things he needs to do in order to be competitive. And I would say this too. I think it's important to remember Ron Rivera, who is easily one of the most respected coaches in the NFL. Ron Rivera spoke very openly about the reasons why Haskins was released to begin with. And it wasn't entirely because of the party or whatever it is that he had without a mask on, breaking, COVID protocol. That's not good. I'm not suggesting at all that it's good, but I'm also not necessarily surprised if, a 24, 25-year-old kid is doing something like that. It's dumb for sure. I'm not going to cast him out because of that. It's stupid. It's anti-team. You can punish him for that and make it be something he can learn from and build on. What Rivera really said was he didn't work hard, which is absolutely not something you ever want to hear from a quarterback. I mean, you absolutely have to show up and put the work in if you're going to be any good. I think Haskins is a talented player. He's not, Peyton Manning. He's not the greatest prospect that you've ever seen. I don't necessarily think where he got drafted is necessarily indicative of the type of player he should be. He probably was more of a second round talent. But you take good quarterbacks in the first round because that's where you need to get them. You can't wait for him to fall. It just probably isn't going to happen. So you have a legitimate, talented kid that probably needs a bit of discipline. Let's put him at the back of the line. Let's pay him less than everybody else on the team, and let's see if he shows up to work. If he wants to have a career, this is what he's going to have to do. And the best part is for the Steelers, it's really zero risk. They're not paying him much. They're paying him the same as they paid Duck Hodges, and look at the difference in talent between the two. Anybody can see that. So if he does right, does the things he needs to do, he learns and improves himself with fresh eyes, a new offensive coordinator now. You put those things together, you have a guy that legitimately could compete for what's probably a pretty open quarterback job next year. And I think it's safe to say he's more talented than Mason Rudolph is. I don't think he's as structured or as battle tested as Rudolph probably is, but you have a legitimate, very low price potential starter. That's not bad.
Right.
It's a good risk for the Steelers. I think with that, if Haskins does right and he continues to develop the way that he should, they've got probably a third string quarterback this season and, potentially a guy that can compete for the job next year.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be good competition between Haskins and Dobbs for that third spot. Definitely something I'm going to pay attention to. And earlier you talked about just your interest in the undrafted rookie free agents when, you used to write, back in 06, 07, that the fans wanted that. When you look at the rookie free agents this year they signed, does anybody stand out to you that you're really excited to see in camp this year?
I think it's hard to say who I would be excited about. Specifically, more in positions. The kid they got from Michigan State, Shakur Brown, I think is probably the one most people are going to identify right away, mostly because the Steelers have, oddly, kind of turned into a fairly decent destination for late round cornerbacks. I think this goes back a ways for a team that gets heavily criticized, and fairly so to a certain degree, about the guys that they draft. You look at the success that they have, not just in undrafted free agency, but in really in waivers and, cast off free agency, if you want to call it that. These unknown guys that don't make it work somewhere else, they seem to draft a level of quality, reasonable NFL cornerbacks, defensive backs, from cast offs. They're able to bring out more in these guys. And I think what it really goes to show is just how difficult it is to evaluate cornerback at the NFL level. And when I say that, what I mean is it is such a fast twitch position. You have to have your body in perfect symmetry, top to bottom, in order to backpedal and turn and run with a guy that's burning down the field at 26 miles an hour. It's really, really hard to do that. If you are even remotely injured, you're not going to be able to do that as well, and it's going to show up on tape. So in many ways, cornerback is the most difficult to project, and probably most important, it's the most difficult to maintain a level of quality play. So you see cornerbacks that are drafted and thought to be these lights out great prospects. None of them are, because really you have to stay healthy all the time. You have to maintain an elite athletic ability to play cornerback. And I think you get some guys that drop out of favor because of injury, perhaps pre-draft. You get some guys that can't make it out of camp because maybe they're hurt. The Steelers are they seem to be anyway, pretty good at spotting players that don't make it somewhere else, or they're not highly valued enough as free agents. They can bring them in cheap, build them from a strategic perspective, teach them the playbook, get them to know what they're doing, and then put them out on the field, and they can maintain health, which is largely luck in this game, stay healthy enough to be able to compete all the time. And so because of that, you have to like a player like Shakur Brown. And to be honest, when I look at him, you see a pretty reasonable player, but I don't think the league has found whatever the magic formula is for slot cornerbacks today. I don't think that's something universal. There's certainly something to be said about agility, about horizontal lateral quickness, but it's not a position for your freak athlete. You don't need elite size to play inside. You need to be really smart, and you need to be really quick.
Right.
That's really general. There are a lot of guys that you can make that comparison to, but smart only matters when you get on the field. You can't really see that on film necessarily unless you have an elite understanding of the defense that they play in. So you're only going off what other people are telling you, and maybe they're wrong. I think Mike Hilton speaks volumes to this. I still think he's underrated. I don't know how Mike Hilton got paid what he got paid. I think the Steelers would have signed him if that's what he was signing for. He probably could have gotten more money. I think he's that valuable. And a good inside slot cornerback, it has a ton of value. So for me, the undrafted guys at cornerback probably have the best opportunity, especially when you've got one kid, James Pierre, that come on, let's be honest, nobody had heard of him until he was getting snaps over Justin Lane, who was a third-round draft pick. The Steelers just gave an extension to a third-round draft pick, and now it looks like James Pierre is in line to be the other starter. Justin Lane, the draft pick, is nobody. We think Justin Lane is a bum. I'm like, all right, well, maybe Justin Lane didn't develop as well as we would have wanted him to, but maybe it's just because these undrafted guys turn out to be better. We can't really say that. I don't think anybody has the evaluation of an undrafted guy down or a cornerback down in today's NFL. The slot guy has to do so much more than the outside guys do. But the premium guys are the ones on the outside because they have to handle the top dogs, your Devontae Adams, your A.J. Browns. These high-level receivers are playing on the outside. They're not playing so much in the slot.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the beauties of the draft and of the undrafted rookie free agents is, regardless of the evaluation, you mentioned Justin Lane, third-round pick. You're thinking he's going to come in, develop, and contribute in year two, but he didn't do that. And, Pierre leaked him last year or left him, in the depth chart. So I know I'm always cheering for the underdog, especially the undrafted guys, the later round draft picks. But it's definitely going to be exciting to watch those guys this camp. And just being respectful of your time, I got two more questions for you. Big Ben bashing, that seems to be the fun thing to do for the pundits this off season. It seems like every day somebody is taking a swing, whether it's Tannenbaum and Colin Coward put in his two cents, which he typically does every time this year. But for whatever reason, I know Ben did not play well toward the end of last season, had a poor playoff showing against the Browns early on. But what do you attribute the lazy narrative of Ben is washed up, he can't compete for a Super Bowl anymore? Why is there so much negative attention focused on Ben?
I think there are a couple things with that. One, I mean, let's just call it what it is. Mike Tannenbaum is in his job currently, you know, to be lazy. I mean, I'm not somebody who likes to disrespect the work of other people, but that's as lazy a take as it gets. I'm sure he said the same thing 6 years ago. That kind of bleeds into the second thing, which football media, at least from a commentary perspective, is incredibly ageist. They don't like older players. The younger guy is always better. I don't think anybody would mistake Ben Roethlisberger for Patrick Mahomes. I'm not suggesting that. There are issues with Ben. You know, there's something here for the Ben haters, and there's something for the people that think that Ben is still exactly who he was in 7 years ago. Right. The reality is he's probably somewhere in the middle. What we know is Ben played pretty well through the first half of the season. And we know if you look at it statistically and you marry that concept with the film, right around the second half of the Dallas game, you know, in other words, 10 snaps after he left the field because he apparently injured both of his knees on one play, we didn't see the same guy. What fans will do is immediately blame the offensive coordinator, which doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, because when he had a healthy quarterback, they were scoring 27 points a game. The quarterback wasn't necessarily the best quarterback in the league, but he was playing well. Ben played very smart. I think that's something that guys like Tannenbaum don't really get into. Ben is an underrated cerebral quarterback. He is very, very smart. He knows the game. People don't think that because, one, let's be honest, he doesn't look like it. People don't like him because of a lot of things. Ben is also kind of standoffish with the media. He doesn't answer in a way that makes you, you know, warm and fuzzy. He doesn't go out of his way to kiss anybody's ass when right. He's on camera. He doesn't do that. He's not that kind of a guy. I've interviewed him. He's the exact same way, you know, with everybody. He doesn't aim for that. He doesn't care. Ben isn't the type that really cares what people think of him. He understands the game of football to a very high degree. When you watch him and see the things that he's doing, you see that he is very, very smart. He can control the game. He can dictate it. But part of that narrative comes down because Ben also is a gunslinger. Ben loves going for the big play. He loves that dagger. And last year, I think that the first half of the season, you might remember this, there was a big throw into the end zone that got picked off. I think it was the end of the first half against Tennessee. He's going for the win that game. He had a throw against Denver that probably wasn't very smart, but again, he was loading up, trying to go for the win. He had two of them against Tennessee, one in the second quarter, one in the fourth quarter, and he missed on them. If he makes those throws, you're talking MVP, and he didn't miss it by much. It wasn't a lack of ability. It's just the throw wasn't perfect the way it probably needed to be. Ben probably has a little more bravado. He wants to make those big plays. He wants to be Big Ben. He's always kind of been like that. Love him or hate him, he's not changing in year 17, you know.
Right.
I think that sort of mentality turns people off. I think they react to a little bit more of a prickly personality when facing the media, and that creates a lot of it. I think he takes far more criticism than far less talented quarterbacks do, far less productive quarterbacks do. And I'm not getting into his legacy. I mean, now for what we've seen, there were quarterbacks that are way worse than him that don't take as much criticism. It's kind of like Kirk Cousins to a degree. These guys are held to a much higher standard because people don't like them.
Right.
That's really it in my mind. Last year was not Ben's best. We've seen him play much better than that. I think it's easy, and I think it's lazy to say it was his arm. I don't think it was his arm. I think you watch him, it was his legs. Mm-hmm. If you followed Ben in his career as well, you know the vast majority of the injuries that he gets have been to his lower body. He doesn't move nearly the way that he used to. You see a lot of the old man injuries coming out in him when he's on the field. So I think he hurt his legs. I think he had to work through that pain. He had to work through the damage, and it affected his ability to get the ball down the field. Outside of that, you know, assuming that you don't want him throwing 25-yard outs every other snap, the Steelers threw the ball short because they knew they weren't going to be able to run it. And certainly the staff backed that up. They had to get something of rhythm in their offense, and they weren't going to be able to run the ball with the offensive line that they had, with the stable of poor running backs that they had, and maybe the worst all-around position group in football, which is their tight ends. They only got half of Vance McDonald, and they needed 150% of Vance McDonald to make their two tight end set work. They didn't have a two tight end set. So people talking about how thin their offense was and how blaming the offensive coordinator for that, you've got a beaten up quarterback, you've got a thin offensive line, you've got poor running backs, and you've got god-awful tight ends. What do you want them to do? I don't understand. You think you can just scheme up plays for all these things to work? No, it's not going to happen. So they did the best that they could do with what they had, because really the strength of their team was a very smart quarterback who can throw the ball accurately, and really four receivers who are really good in space. James Washington is great after the catch. You've seen what Chase Claypool can do. They gambled well on him and turned that into gold right away. Juju Smith-Schuster is a good short yardage receiver. He can run after the catch. He can make plays. That was their strength, but that's all they had. So I don't think Ben was bad as much as what we saw in the offseason proves that even the Steelers knew what their problems were. First-round draft pick was a star running back. Their second-round draft pick was a tight end. The third-round draft pick was a starting center, which I don't want to get into it because I don't feel the need to trample on poor Maurkice Pouncey's grave, but he was terrible last year. David DeCastro was not good last year. Mm-hmm. These are all positions they replaced. They willingly replaced because they were terrible last year. So for a Tannenbaum or whoever else to rag on Ben and talk about him being done and everything like that, honestly, I think it is one part he's old and they're going to be right eventually. Ben's career is going to end eventually. I'm pretty sure time's undefeated. We know that. More than anything else, they don't like him, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you don't like him, I'm looking at it objectively, I can totally see why people don't like him, but he was productive when he was healthy, and that was with a pretty bad offense top to bottom. So for me, if you fix some of these things, I think you're going to see Ben's going to look a bit better than he did last year. I think as an offense, they'll look a bit better than they did last year. How good that's going to be, I don't know. We'll see, but they're definitely healthier. They're younger. They're going to be more athletic. And they're going to be able to do more things because of that.
Right. Yeah, and hopefully with a year for Ben to rehabilitate, recover, and just get more confidence in that elbow following the surgery, just realizing that he's near the end of his career, knowing that, you know, this could potentially be his last season. And, you know, while all the hate, you can't really put a tangible value on that, but I'm sure he's seeing those messages out there in the media, and it's got to be motivating to him. And Neil, just to close this out, you know, as we get ready to open training camp next week, and you look at this team, all the new parts, how do you see this team performing in the upcoming year? I don't know if you want to give a record prediction, how far they'll go if they make the postseason. What's your take on the success of the Steelers in 2021?
You know, I think, the Steelers are caught in a transition at this point. The names I mentioned before, your Maurkice Pouncey's, your David DeCastro's, these are you know, franchise legendary types of players. These are fan favorite guys who played the game at a high level for a long time. And the team is now coming off what is, in my opinion, by far their worst seasons as pros. I don't know what DeCastro is going to do. Pouncey obviously retired. They were a bad offensive unit last year, and they're going to have to replace Pouncey with a third-round rookie who didn't really play center all that much last year. And Trey Turner comes in to replace DeCastro, coming off injury himself. You can see that group being better, and you can see it being worse. And I think there are games it's going to be better, and it's going to be worse. I don't know how consistent they're going to be. I think the team knows that. I think there's a reason they brought in a new offensive line coach, a main coach. I know he was the assistant last year. Those are two totally different positions, by the way. They're not necessarily translatable from one to the other, believe it or not. They really are different jobs. They need to go in a completely different direction, and it's because what they were doing didn't work with the guys that they have, and they need to get new guys. You're going to see them do something very, very well, and you're probably going to see them mix a lot of those basic things up in different looks. I think that's probably what Matt Canada is going to do primarily. He's going to have to find ways to disguise what's really going to be an inside zone and outside zone running team. I think they brought in the right personnel for that. I think they've shown in the past they have the ability to coach and call a zone-based running team. And I think they were nowhere near being able to do that last year. With all due respect to James Conner, not going to be a good inside zone runner. Well, maybe not. But he wasn't healthy enough to consistently do that. And I don't think they got the play from their interior line to be good enough running inside zone. I think that Najee Harris can run anything. He's that talented, and they're going to run him inside zone and outside zone. That's all they're going to do running the ball. It's going to look different, but that's really all they're going to do. As far as their passing game goes, I think they're going to feel that they have a little bit more going for them in terms of protection. They'll want to get the ball down the field probably a little bit more, but they're still going to throw short, and they're still going to use that to supplement their ground game. All of that said, they're going to take a bit of a hit defensively. I don't think Bud Dupree is an all-star or anything like that, but he's a solid player and a great athlete. They used him in a lot of different ways that they're not going to be able to this year, and especially considering their secondary, they don't have any depth. One injury, which, you know, it happens to every team. Somebody's going to get hurt, but it just seems like the Steelers have a much better chance of losing a guy that they're not functionally going to be able to replace. That situation is going to loom large for them. The feeling that I get in general is this team is going to be a lot like it was in 2013, when by the third quarter of week one, they were down basically the irreplaceable Maurkice Pouncey because they didn't have a center on the roster, and the irreplaceable Larry Foote because they didn't have an experienced linebacker on the roster. Both of those two guys down, it took them 4 weeks to figure out how to play without them. And Pouncey, while Pouncey was a pretty good player, Larry Foote was not a Pro Bowl level guy. Shouldn't have been hard to replace him. When you have to do that with a 6-round rookie who can't cover, and you have to have Troy Polamalu coming down and play in the box like all year, the rest of your team is going to fall apart. And they started off 0-4 that year. I think the Steelers are going to be better coming out of the gate than 0-4, but they're going to have a slump during the season that's going to really hurt things. It's hard to bet against a Mike Tomlin coach team because Mike Tomlin gets them to 500 even when they don't deserve to be anywhere near 500. That 2013 team was a great example of that. They won 6 of 8 to save 500 on the season, and they were legitimately, Ben even said it, they were legitimately the worst team in football through 4 or 5 games. You know, they were bad. I think that this iteration is like that team a bit. I think luck is going to run out on him at some point. I'm thinking 7-10, not a 7-10 that a reasonably minded fan is going to be embarrassed by, but a 7-10 that's going to fight their asses off each and every week, but just isn't deep enough yet. They're rebuilding. They need another draft. They need another free agency period to really think that they can win 12 games against a very good division. Baltimore is a really good team. Cleveland is a really good team. Cincinnati got a lot better this offseason. There's no doormat there anymore. How many of those Tomlin teams are 500 because they got to play the Bengals and the Browns when they won 5 games between each other? And usually they split, you know, they got to win against each other. That was it. You know, it's to me, they have too much to overcome this season to think that they're going to compete. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I like the direction they're going in. I think they're going to be good come 2022. I don't think this is going to be their year, though. They just have too much that they need to build. The next generation of the team is being built now, and I love the way they're doing it.
It's just they need another year of that before we can really expect much from them. I say 7-10. I really hope I'm wrong. I really hope you cut out the soundbite and stick it to me in January when they're, 14-3. I hope that happens.
Well, hey, I appreciate your analysis there, your objectivity and taking a look at the team. And I do think you're right that they're building the team of the future. And, there's still a few holdovers here from the old regime in this transition to the new. Maybe this is Ben's last season. And I do hope you're wrong. But that's why they play the games. But Neil, I just want to thank you so much for coming on today. I know I truly appreciate you being willing to come and talk with me for a good 45 minutes. Much gratitude to you. And can you just tell the listeners where they could find your work?
Yeah, definitely. I edit the entire network, the NFL Network. So Team Wire is kind of what we call it. I primarily write for Steelers Wire. When I do, you can definitely check me out there or at Neil Coulong on Twitter. I probably spend too much time there. as bad as Twitter is for everybody, there's a tip for the kids. Just don't go on Twitter. If you want real analysis, read the real writers, come up with your own opinions. Don't generate them on social media.
Awesome. Well, hey, Neil, again, thanks so much. We hope to have you back on the Still Study at some point, and you have a great rest of the day.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care, Neil.
Well, that was great. Neil, if you're listening, thanks so much, man, for coming on. It was great to talk to you. Great to hear your insight. Great to hear your wisdom. Great to hear your experiences from covering the team, hear about your work ethic and the passion that goes into your work. Good stuff, man. We hope to have you back on. Again, you could follow Neil at Neil Coulong. Please follow him on Twitter. Give him a shout out. Much love to Neil. But just in reflecting on what Neil said, what really jumped out to me is, again, the passion that he has for covering the Steelers. And even though he was in Minnesota for a period of time, he's now back in Pittsburgh. That love for the Steelers has never left him. And he talked about how he had this desire to take these little nuggets of these shreds of wisdom that were shared by beat writers back in the day, like Jerry Dulac, Ed Bouchette. And he wanted to hear more about them. Again, I referenced whenever Ed Bouchette used to have what he called the slog on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And prior to games, he would post like his thoughts, bullet point style. And you wanted to hear more because they were pieces of news or information that you couldn't find anywhere else. And what Neil did with his writing is he took those little nuggets and he expanded on them. And that's where his profile of writing developed. And it's just really interesting. And just his work ethic, getting up in the morning, putting in that 2.5 hours, writing, pounding the coffee. But it was a labor of love for him. It didn't seem like work. It's what he wanted to do. He was driven and he was passionate about it. So it's just super cool. And then to hear his take on the team this year, 2021, I was expecting him to have an optimistic, rosy outlook. But he dropped the 7-10 bomb. And I'm not going to lie, that caught me completely off guard. But that shows his objectivity, his ability to take a look at all the different parts of the team, the offensive line, the defense, which he feels taking a step back, and make that prediction. And like he said, he hopes he's wrong. I hope he's wrong. But again, Neil, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to have him back on the Still Study podcast another time, but just grateful he was here. All right, and now we have, for a second week in a row, some reader questions. Again, you can hit me up via email at thestillstudy@gmail.com. We will try to get your questions on here as time allows. We're going to get two in today. The first one comes from Bill H. from Virginia. His question: the consensus seems to be this will be Ben's final year, which is completely understandable. But do you see any possibility he returns for another year? Great question, Bill. And there are so many factors that go into this answer. And I think there are two things that are going to impact this. Number one, it's going to come down to his health. Can he stay healthy? This is the first test to determine whether or not he comes back for another season. If he can stay healthy, and I'm not just talking the major injuries, if he can avoid bumps and bruises that become nuisances during everyday living. He does have three children. I'm sure he wants to be mobile and able to enjoy life. As long as he can avoid those injuries, stay in good health, stay in good shape, that's going to be most important. But I think number two is going to depend on whether or not he could still play at a high level. If he comes out this season and he does tank, if he proves the Tannenbaum and Coward narratives to be true, I don't think he comes back. And I think what he'll do is point to the aging of his body, the wear and tear as a reason for his decline play. And I think at that point he steps away. Now, if he has a successful season, I think there's a better chance that he comes back. They make the playoffs and he still feels like he has something left to give. If he's reinvigorated by Harris and that young offensive line and the defense, I could see him coming back for another season. Now, if they were to go on to win the Super Bowl, which, again, man, for that to happen, the stars would have to align, and I hope they do. I think at that point, he would hang it up and retire. So a lot of factors at play there. Great question, Bill. I appreciate it. Thank you for supporting the Still Study. The next one comes from Burgonator Sevens. No location provided. Sup, Jeremy? Join the study sessions and the podcast. Any chance you'll have current / former players on the shows? Keep on keeping on. Burgonator Sevens. Yes, that is in the plans, but we are just starting out here. We are working on expanding our contacts, and as we do that, we are planning to have players on, and you know, hopefully we're able to get some of the rookies on here. I would love to talk to some of the undrafted rookie free agents. Would love to have Roethlisberger on the show and some other players. Would love to talk to Tomlin. Again, that may sound like a pipe dream, but guess what? I'm persistent, man. We'll get somebody on here. So I would say within the next year, we will have players on the Still Study podcast. So Burgonator Sevens, thanks so much for your question. Stay tuned. I'll be sure to shout you out whenever we do have a player on. And now it's that time in the show where I, since I no longer have Andrew the Mule to drop the history nugget, I'm going to give you a little history nugget of my own about your Pittsburgh Steelers. The success of the Pittsburgh Steelers is well documented. And as fans, we have been spoiled for decades. Think about it. We've had the opportunity to watch three Super Bowls, 2005, 2008, 2010. And we got to watch our team win two of those. Sure, that 2010 loss to the Packers was heartbreaking. The Rashard Mendenhall fumble still is just devastating. But the success that the team has enjoyed has been amazing. But if you look at the earlier years of the franchise, the Steelers were flat out bad, abhorrent, horrific, terrible, nasty, disgusting. And I don't mean in a temperament kind of way. I mean, they were just a flat out awful football team. And they had some of the worst seasons ever, which got me thinking, what is the worst season that the Steelers ever experienced? And did they ever have a season where they went 0-for? Did they ever drop the goose egg in the win column? What are your thoughts? Think about that for a second. In your recollection or your knowledge of the Pittsburgh Steelers, what is the worst season they've ever experienced? Educational practice says to give 3 seconds of wait time for you to think. So here you go. That's a little bit more than 3 seconds. But here's what I can tell you. There were three instances where your Pittsburgh Steelers won only one game. The years, 1939, the Steelers went 1-9-1, and in fact, they were called the Pittsburgh Pirates during that time.
In 1941, they went 1-9-1 again. They were the Steelers in 41. And in 1969, the Steelers went 1-13, which you will have to classify as the worst ever season for the Pittsburgh Steelers because of the 13 losses. And that was the season that enabled the Steelers to get the first overall pick, in which they selected Terry Bradshaw. The point differentials for those teams, 39, they scored 218 points, gave up 404. Ouch. 41, scored 103, gave up 276, and in 69, scored 114, gave up 216. All I know is 2021 better not have a one in the win column. Could you imagine that? My God, nightmare. And that is your history nugget. Andrew, if you are somehow listening, tell me what you think, brother. We're keeping your spirit alive here with the history nuggets. And still, study-ins. That is the end, the conclusion, the wrap-up, the enter your finality word here, whatever you want to call it. That's it. We're done. Episode number 13, wrapping it up. So grateful that you joined me here today. This is fun. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying you. I love the interaction that I'm getting through email that you're sending me. Follow me on Twitter, dropping me messages on Twitter. It means everything to me. I'm appreciating that you're reading the work. I'm appreciating that you're listening to the study sessions, the Still Study podcast. I'm having fun. I'm passionate about this, not going anywhere, and I hope to provide even more Steelers content to you. Please continue to share with your family and friends. Spread the word about the Still Study. Drop me an email at thestillstudy@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Still Study, and be on the lookout for a lot of good stuff coming your way. And let me leave you with this. Life is beautiful, inspiring, engaging, amazing. In the black and gold. Peace.